Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
As you said, it's my fourth year, so it's time to show really that I want a jersey in Buffalo. And I just got to take every opportunity I get here. So it's every day.
Prospects Challenge is upon us. Game one happens tonight, not for the Sabres, but at Lecom Harbor Center. It's the Devils and the Blue Jackets. Yesterday, prospects on the ice for the Sabres, including now four-year prospect, and most recently, Amerks leading goal scorer, Isak Rosén. So welcome into Sabres Live on this day. A little bit to get to from the players and Coach Michael Leone yesterday as far as getting ready, Marty, for game one for the Sabres tomorrow night at Lecom Harbor Center.
I am a little disappointed in Isak Rosén. He didn't say I'm in the best shape of my life. I mean,
that was 20 seconds. How do you know? You didn't listen to the whole thing.
That would have been on our group chat right away. That would have been a best shape of my life headlines there. So bonus point for him to not mention it. But no, I like the matter-of-fact approach to his media availability to that soundbite we just saw. Basically, it's my fourth year. I mean, I need to go out there and really show that I want a jersey here in Buffalo and that I should deserve and that I am going to earn a jersey. Now, when I look at the roster, it's going to be tough, right, to be able to say, can you crack that roster? But put yourself in a position to be maybe an extra or maybe the first call up. That's really what your goal is. I mean, to make the roster great, but to be that guy that can come up and play minutes, produce, make a difference, that is what the Sabres are looking forward to when you look at Isak Rosén. And if not, then, I mean, you're 5, 6, and 7. You're basically fading away because there's other prospects that are going to take that spot. So this is a big year and a big prospect challenge in training camp for Rosén.
So different for you in the course of your career because it's a small number that you're competing against for an even smaller number of spots on a team. The forward ranks have the most jobs. So that in itself is appealing. You're a forward. How do you grab one of those 13 or 14 spots? Another way to look at it is what I want to get from you here. If you're Isak Rosén and have made the absolute correct advancement statistically through 3 years in North America so far, and in the process earned NHL time, do you not think that at his most confident best, Rosén should be saying, there's no reason I can't be better than Justin Danforth.
Danforth.
There's no reason I can't be better than Peyton Krebs. There's no reason I can't be better than a newcomer in Doan who didn't play in the NHL like the whole entirety of last season, right? AHL, NHL. Why can't I be better than those guys? And or, on some people's list right now, Beck Malenstein doesn't even get in the top 12. Okay, so maybe Isak Rosén. So from your experience with this, like, is that how a play, because there can be many ways to do this, but do you think that's how an individual like Rosén may look at things?
So I think something that plays against Isak Rosén, and maybe this is more of I don't want to even say an outsider look, is are you showing me the confidence that says I'm going to grab it? Like when Zach Benson showed up at development camp the first year in Prospect Challenge, and then in camp, you're like, man, this guy, he's out of his pores is coming out confidence and arrogance and watch me and I deserve to be there, right? There's a big part of that that needs to, the spotlights have to be facing you to be able to say, I'm gaining that roster spot. I'm going for it. So I think that there is something there that it's like when you watch the games, is he standing out every time he's on the ice? Is he standing out every time he touches the puck? Is he standing out battling the puck one-on-one in the corner? And maybe it plays against Isaac Rosanne. He's more of a mild-mannered, well-spoken, I don't want to say timid, but there hasn't been the other side of it. And that's what I would like to see. So,
and who's to say it doesn't happen?
Who's to say it doesn't happen? Like, I think like Konstantin Alanis gets drafted, and when you watch him on the ice, there was a little swagger right away, development camp and whatnot. And right away, people were like, Konstantin Alanis could be making the roster. That, because that's your first impression. How do you get people to perceive you, your first impression? Mm-hmm. And I've seen over my years, guys that were so talented, so good, but didn't really give that first impression that they were willing to run through the wall or the door, that all of a sudden you're kind of falling behind. And Roseanne could definitely go in this year and dominate and put the spotlight right on himself. It hasn't been there. And that's what I think needs to happen for him to take that next step.
Well, just for comparison's sake, Roseanne in his first year with Rochester scored 14 goals, 37 points, 66 games, then had an excellent playoff, 4 goals, 8 points, 14 games, was given that, you know, by nature of the team, opportunity to excel in the playoffs and certainly did. Now, I'm not saying players completely alter their makeup through the course of their career, but I do think change is possible. And so, yes. And sometimes, not unlike the definition of luck, it's where preparation and opportunity meet, right? Like some perceive it as lucky, but it's like, no, you're not capitalizing on the luck unless you've actually put in the work. And then, mm-hmm. you know, it shows up one day for you to take advantage of it. Helenius, to your point, swaggery camp, season starts, youngest player in the league, took a while to get going, looked more like what we may now project at the end. Well, yes. Guess what? He had 35 points in 65 games, basically identical to Roseanne in his first AHL year, and had a nice playoff with 6 points in 8 games. So would you look at these two players similarly or not at all?
I don't. Okay. I don't. And I'm sorry because I think Alanis did it like mostly in the second half. And like, so you're going to probably compartmentalize like different parts of their development. Okay. Well, Alanis was an 18-year-old kid. First half, he admitted it was a harder adjustment.
Yeah, but so was, this is the point. So was Roseanne. I'm talking about Roseanne's rookie year.
But I think that now is like almost 4 years ago. That it's like almost forgotten, right? Like, okay, you're a fourth-year pro guy. It doesn't matter how old you are. You have to be able to get to the next step. And it's not fair. Like, I have played with some guys that never had the opportunity that I wish they would have, or maybe weren't ready at the time their opportunity presented themselves and then never got another one. Because you are going to get one or two. Some get 3, 4, 5, 6 opportunities, right? It just
guys like this with first round pedigree always do.
First round pedigree will get a little bit more leeway. They'll get another chance. I got another chance. I mean, gee, I got drafted, and then my career in juniors went down. Second year, I took a step back. Third year, I took a step back, but I had a contract. Mm-hmm. My first year in Rochester took another step back until the last month of the season where I stepped forward. But because I had a contract, because they were kind of stuck with me, and because I was a first-round pick, I got the opportunity. And then I got back on the right track, and injuries allowed me to fill in. But again, you mentioned it's one of two spots in the NHL, one of two spots in Rochester. As a forward, you may be given a few more opportunities, but you also have to make sure that when you do, you really perform at the highest level, which we haven't seen from Roseanne yet. And look, maybe we will, or maybe we won't see out of Helenius and Oslin. And there's a lot of prospects that at some point, very soon, we'll have to up their game for the Sabres to say, yes, we now move with you in our roster as opposed to without you.
I don't think people are giving Roseanne enough credit for the year that he had last year. First of all, not unlike Quinn and Paterka, they were thought of as a duo.
Yeah.
Roseanne and Jiří Kulik were the duo. Jiří left. All Ezak did was become the goal scoring and point leader on the team. Mm-hmm. And cameo more in the NHL than some would have thought. I don't know if I want to be dismissive, not saying you are, of his chances this year.
Yeah. I think, like, if you're, but also there's the outsider's perception of everything. And, but internally, you got to think that when they, Kevin Adams and the hockey operations department meet on players mm-hmm. and they have the development staff there and the Rochester coaches there, I think the conversation is much more positive than what I make it look like right now from the outside.
Really?
Because they've, for Ezak Roseanne?
Yeah.
I would think that the
I would say the opposite based on who they went out and signed this summer in Danforth.
I think that there's,
and that's not the disrespect to Danforth.
Like Adam Mayer,
he's a known
development coach.
He's
probably
NHL.
Like, yeah.
You know,
I've talked to scouts. I've talked to scouts that really, like, that have gone in the building and scouted mm-hmm. Ezak Roseanne and really liked him. Really thought highly of him, right? And so that conversation, when you talk to scouts, you know they're talking within each other. Mm-hmm. You know what that goes. So I would think that the development coaches with the Sabres, who have had those conversations with other scouts and everything, are coming in and saying, hey, like, let's not forget about Ezak Roseanne. He's done everything we've asked him to. He's mm-hmm. developed in a nice, like, you know, curve going up. He's young, and that was a lot
22.
To put on his shoulders. He's only 22.
He's a
guys
three,
get out of
as
college.
A European, he's 22 and has three full AHL seasons under his
Some
belt.
Some guys get out of college at 22. Some guys get out of playing in Europe at 22, 23, and they come over and play another 2 years in the American League. So I think that internally, and I get what you're saying because they did go out and acquire Doan and sign Danforth and, you know, did not move off of a Peyton Krebs or anybody else.
And there's a number of reasons why. There maybe, presumably, not like don't want to be as close to the bottom, meaning youngest team in the NHL, right? They want to move off of that.
Roseanne does not
change that number.
No, because then it's the same narrative. It's like you keep putting your trust in younger players and it hasn't worked for 14 years. Why is it working now?
Right. So many things can be true of what was just said, where everything you said as far as outsiders' perception of Roseanne may well, in fact, be that. Love this player. Love the upside. And the Sabres presumably love that too.
Yep.
But the Sabres are trying to change something that Roseanne has not had a hand in. That is the absence of playoffs and the need to be older, more mature, right? And so you do that by doing the moves Buffalo did this offseason.
Yeah, so, but
you don't want to eliminate competition either.
You don't want to eliminate competition. You also don't want to have players show up to camp knowing there's no way they're making the team. And you have to have guys ready to step in, mm-hmm. which I hate to just say it's been 20 years, but nothing of that 05-06 season would have been what it was if guys that got called up weren't ready to step in. Mm-hmm. And it was young guys. It was Derek Roy and Jason Pominville and the Paul Gostad and those type of guys, right, that came in and stepped in. Now, you had older veteran players that were pulling the cart, but everybody stepped in. So if you look at Ezak Roseanne now and you're thinking, okay, but when you get called up for 8 games and you have 0 points and you get called up for 8 games and you have 1 point, does that make you ready to step in? I'm not asking for a point a game, but I would have liked to have seen 2 goals, 3 assists, 5 points in 8 games. And is it a circumstance of who are you playing with? Where are you being placed? Absolutely. But now prove that instead of elevating a Justin Danforth to a second line or a Peyton Krebs to a top six, that if the opportunity is there, you're the one that's going to get that spot. Maybe we don't have you on the top 12 to start the season, but we think of you in a better spot for, you know, going in and replacing Alex Tuck if there's an injury or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't want an injury to Alex Tuck, not what I'm saying, but I'm saying be that guy that, mm-hmm. that's going to go and fill in that spot and not a fourth liner that you're going to elevate.
Main camp opens next week for the Sabres. Rookie camp is open now. Buffalo's first Prospects Challenge game is tomorrow, part of 3 and 4 this weekend. They will have games on Friday, Saturday, and Monday, the latter, which concludes at noon. And as mentioned, New Jersey, Columbus kick things off tonight at 7. Devils and Sabres will do so at Lecom Harbor Center tomorrow at 7. We've talked about the roster, you know, that is out there for the Prospects Challenge. You can find all the details at sabres.com. Another of the players who is, you know, in this group and trying to take a next step forward at an even younger age than Roseanne is, of course, now soon to be second year pro Consta Hellenius. Consta, we just did the contrast, very, very, very similar first year AHL numbers to Roseanne. The difference being Roseanne always a winger, who, as the playoffs went on, we saw him, and late regular season, in the absence of Jiří Kulík, we saw Roseanne be willing to, you know, do more.
Anything.
And so too did Östlund, and obviously Hellenius moved forward. But there was a really interesting, honest, thoughtful, pause answer by Hellenius yesterday. Because, of course, Coach Michael Leone reinforced during his media session when talking about Hellenius, yeah, this, that, and the other thing, move to wing later in the year, blah, blah, blah. Consta was asked, did the move to wing, you know, take away some of the responsibility and make things a little easier for you in your first year? Pause. Not sure about that.
You always have to be responsible. It doesn't matter where you play.
And the reason being, and this goes back to our ongoing Tage, center, yes. wing, center, wing, center, wing. Consta was drafted as a center. All the comments were developing this center for his two-way game. And yes. look, this is not questioning any decision.
He was labeled as a true center. Remember, like Jerry Ford, yes. everybody's saying he's a true center.
And he is. And this is not questioning any decision because Consta was not impacting the games consistently the way you would hope. But he was also the youngest player in the league, and they were trying to give him an opportunity to feel more impactful. And guess yeah. what? It happened. So it's not a contradiction of
he
anybody's...
He shot more. He right. was more confident with the puck, and it helps. It helps gaining that confidence.
The beauty of the answer, not only because it was so honest, was that it once again revealed why he was drafted. Because he believes he is a 200-foot center. The twinkle in his eyes when talking about the defensive side of it, that's the part of moving to the wing that you could tell didn't sit as well with him. He wants to be the guy that gets the puck back defensively so he can then create. And he's going to have way more opportunity to do that now as a 19-year-old in this league with a full year of experience.
Yeah, but I'm asking you this question, Duffer. So you have, like... Let's just say that your top three centers are Jiří Kulík, Josh Norris, and Ryan McLeod. Okay, 1, 2, 3. And Peyton Krebs is the fourth line center. If it like somehow is not working great with Peyton Krebs in that position, would you have Roseanne, this or that, Roseanne getting called up to be in that spot or Consta Hellenius getting called up being in that spot, knowing that Hellenius has that 200-foot game that he wants to continue to develop?
If it's a center that you're swapping out and the recent sample of games at whenever time you're talking about has Hellenius at center and doing what he's supposed to do, have zero issue with him coming up in a fourth line or even a third line role if he is excelling. And isn't that the point of, hey, we've been watching, you've been doing it, we need yeah. this in our lineup right now, we're handing you the keys with trust to give us 8 to 10 minutes a night right now, the best you can possibly do.
And it comes back to the perception of where Roseanne is at right now, where Alanis is at, is that my answer would have been the same thing. If all of a sudden, like a month into the season, you're like, hey, we need somebody to come in and give us some center minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm looking right away. Constance Alanis, come up, right? Let's go. We'll give you a taste. Maybe it's 7-8 games. We'll give you a taste. Let's see where you're at. Like, mm-hmm. I think that would be, so that's the perception right now. Maybe internally, it's not there yet. Maybe internally, they would say, Roseanne's the guy or somebody else. I don't know. But I feel like from the outside perspective right now, I would trust Consolanius in that spot and I would have zero problem. And I would be excited to see what can he do in with those responsibilities.
Again, if you're missing any details about the Prospects Challenge right now, head to sabres.com. It's all there. When the games are, how to get into the building, who's on the roster, the matchups, and again, it starts tonight.
I'm laughing, Duffer, because on X today, we got starting goalies for New Jersey and Columbus tonight. People were tweeting about who was the starting goalies.
And?
I didn't pay attention that close to it, but I just know that I saw, Jeff knows, Jeff, producer Jeff is going to put it in there because he paid attention, but I just saw that Columbus said, they basically were like, this guy's going to start, and then New Jersey, it was going to be a split. But yes, we had some confirmation on starting goalies for tonight.
It will no longer be Tarasov, like old days with Columbus.
Yeah, Daniil Tarasov used to play all the time. But funny enough, so Bennett for the Devils, he actually played at Kemptville, where Jacob played last, well, 2 years ago.
You mean
Jacob
Tyler Brennan? Kemptville.
Was that?
Are you talking?
No, Malik and Bennett are sharing the net for.
No, it says Tyler Brennan to start for Devils against Columbus.
Yeah, Malik and Bennett were sharing the net. They're Devils prospect, but they have three goalies, so they were sharing at the other end. But okay. he's a kid that played at Kemptville in the CCHL where my kid was before. So I've seen him. He's a massive goaltender. So anyway, I don't know if he'll get any action, but he's a tall goalie and he's with the Devils.
Well, hopefully we see the large Topias Laineinen tomorrow for Buffalo. And at least that's my personal opinion. And we'll be down at the rink tomorrow. So we'll be heavy on Sabres prospects as we get set for game one of Buffalo's prospect challenge tomorrow night, which allows us to alter the schedule somewhat and do a double dip and maybe a Stanley Cup final preview matchup in our teams of the day. In fact, 5 months ago, 5 months ago, Washington and Winnipeg headed towards the end of the regular season and finished number one in their respective conferences. They are the last two alphabetically in the NHL, and they well could have met last year in the Stanley Cup final based on their regular seasons of play. We're going to combine the two of them in kind of matchup style later on in the show here on Sabres Live as our teams of the day to close things out, because then tomorrow we can invest all the time in Sabre prospects and them getting ready for the weekend, which of course has Hockey Fest wrapping around it, Sabres Fan Fest on Saturday at KeyBank Center. The last thing I want to quickly go around the NHL before we do teams of the day in the back half and solicit any of your prospect questions, I suppose, before the challenge begins for Buffalo. I mean, if you have any, hit us up at Sabres Live and we can address today. We can certainly address tomorrow when we're on site at Lecom Harbor Center. But yesterday we briefly reacted to the report from Frank Saravalli about Kirill Kaprizov.
Yes.
And, you know, did he or didn't he? The information didn't come from Bill Guerin in the Wild, so says the GM. Did he?
He also said it didn't come from the agent. He says, I know it didn't come from Kaprizov's side.
But the suggestion is Kaprizov has turned down what in the short term would be the most lucrative deal in the NHL at 8 years, $16 million per. It just, my only question for you here for 2 minutes before we break is, do you see any likelihood that not just Kaprizov, but maybe like three or four or five or six more others decide, as they could extend now or wait till next summer, do you think there's a handful of players out there that truly want to challenge and change the marketplace and make sure that in this growing cap world, It's their responsibility to take as much as humanly possible, which when the cap goes over $100 million means 20% of the cap, which means over $20 million on an annual basis.
So I have a feeling that Kaprizov is wanting to do just that. Look, I came in, I'm a superstar. I need to be paid like one. I know everybody talks about McKinnon and McDavid and Draisaitl and Matthews and
Eichel. You know,
Eichel and Marner and all of that. And Marner took $12 million, and Kaprizov's like, dude, you had 100 points this year. Like, why are you taking $12 million? Like, go for 14, 15, 16, whatever.
Is that his voice or your made-up voice?
That's my made-up voice. For him. But Kaprizov, I have the feeling that he would want to set the bar for the market. And look, the reports were from Frank Cervalli, turned down 8 years, $16 million per year. Now, Guerin said it's not true. He said it's not coming from me, that's for sure, and it didn't come from Kaprizov. Somebody somewhere. But that was also Elliot Friedman that says, look, there's definitely teams that would be willing to offer 7 times 19, 7 times 20 to Kirill Kaprizov with the cap going up. And I think Kaprizov knows that. Now, we have the Winnipeg Jets, one of our team of the day, Kyle Connor. Like, I mean, think of Kyle Connor. He had, 97 points last year. He's a UFA next season. Maybe there's an extension there.
Marty, but second half of the season, all we talked about, Thompson and Tuck, among the league goal-scoring leaders. Tuck is in this conversation, too. Not to be a 20% of the cap, but to be higher than what people thought before. This is just the reality for anybody who's a year out from UFA right now.
Ovechkin, like Washington and Winnipeg are our two teams of the day. We have Ovechkin that's UFA in a year, Kyle Connor. I think Kyle Connor will probably be like, okay, I'll sign a good contract, but that's the perception I've got of Kyle Connor. Ovechkin is like, if he wants to play in the NHL, he'll figure it out with Ted Leonsis, the owner, and they'll come to an agreement, kind of like Sidney Crosby's done. But Kaprizov, to me, is like, I want my bag. Like, get me my bag, and I'll carry it with me. Like, that's the way I look at it.
All right, we'll see how it goes. It's a long list, and for the most part, we have shied away from doing the year-out projection because collectively or individually, we think similarly that most of these players, the McDavids, Eichels, and Kaprizovs, are going to get their deals in their current markets, and we would be wasting air if talking about summer of 2026. But when you have a situation where potentially a player has turned down a deal of this nature and recognizing how many teams will have the cap space to max somebody out next year, that's where. And because we're on the cusp of being on the ice and the Sabres prospects will be in game situation tomorrow, just changes the way you think a little bit, not unlike when fall is in the air.
I saw a tweet earlier today, just so you know, I'm looking forward to, because I think it was Travis Yost, but he said, Kaprizov, Eichel, Marner, ? Because Vegas is always in those conversations. Who knows what happens?
Yeah, well, we know this. FanFest is just 2 days away, and it happens this Saturday, 10 to 6, KeyBank Center, Alumni Plaza, and we're looking for you and, honestly, friends, family, bring them all down. It's a terrific day, 10 to 6, player appearances, autographs, hockey games to be played, tons of activities for kids, giveaways, so much more. Sabres.com/FanFest for all your details. We're back after this. Capitals and Jets are teams.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly why it's not outside of Cleveland. You know the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Teams of the day on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Ending our Teams of the Day series with a Stanley Cup matchup that could have but did not happen this past year. Best in the East, best in the West. Washington Capitals, Winnipeg Jets. We've decided to put them together in a matchup and an evaluation to close out our series before diving in from the rink tomorrow at Sabres Prospects Challenge. Incredibly, the matchup has two teams that now sit heading into this season with basically about $4 million each in cap space with which to work. The Capitals have been to the playoffs 16 of the last 18 years, and just this past year, won a round for the first time since winning the Stanley Cup. Winnipeg has been in the playoffs 7 of the last 8 years, and those have often come with incredibly high expectations as well. And this Winnipeg team is dramatically different for one reason only. They're no longer going into a season with Nick Ehlers as part of the lineup. Yeah. So what do we make of the Capitals and the Jets after what they went through and what, in the shortest road, this season only, lays ahead for both?
You want the good news or the bad news?
I think there's nothing but good news for these two teams.
Okay, well, maybe I'll be the negative one on today's show about this stuff, because I just don't see the Capitals being able to continue at the pace that they did last year. I see a regression in their scoring. They were second in goals for per game last year. They almost added a full goal per game from the year before to their average last year. And I see it regressing. So I see that. I see their goaltending regressing. I don't love their back end. I mean, this was a healthy back end last year, and they had everybody perform, produce. But I'm like, how? Like, I'm like, Chychrun's good, yes. Carlson getting older. Sandin, Matt Roy. Like, I'm like, I just don't see the Washington Capitals being able to duplicate or even get near to what they did last year. Now, Spencer Carberry is a fantastic coach. One coach of the year, big reason why they were there. Dylan Strom was awesome. But they had so much out of Alexei Protas. They had so much out of Pierre-Luc Dubois, Wilson, McMichael, that everybody's going to have to perform that same rate. And I just don't see it happening. Now, maybe they do, and I'll be happy, because Washington was fun last year to see an Ovechkin in the chase. But I feel like that shiny toy is kind of like getting a little dolled up.
Well, they've been fun for 2 years under Carberry, and that's how they made the playoffs the previous year when no one thought it was possible. So
minus 37 goal differential that year.
Yeah, but they won. So, yeah. I mean, both teams, Winnipeg and Washington, were really close in average age. They were just under 30. So you look at the tweaks, and there's always room for someone young. Like in the case of the Capitals, it was Ryan Leonard at the end of last year in the regular season, and then in the playoffs. Yes. He effectively gave them nothing offensively. So that's a wild card for them. What does a full-time first-year Leonard do in this lineup? Where I would disagree with you is the fact that Protas, Dubois, McMichael are just rising into their peak years. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they hit last year gives you endless belief that you can get more from these players as Ovechkin regresses, Carlson regresses, and you hope that you stabilize the defense, of which you said was insanely, almost perfectly healthy the entire year, but then lost Ferravari for the playoffs, so it caused disruption, and it didn't result in the best of things at times in the postseason before their ouster. But it was still a terrific season.
Do you think Montreal with a healthy set? Because that one game where Montembeau and Thompson both got hurt, but Thompson returned the next game, Montembeau never returned. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like if Montembeau is there for Montreal, like it doesn't end in five. Yeah. It may have gone to seven. And Winnipeg, on the other end, were 2 minutes away from losing the seventh game against 100%. St. Louis, and somehow miraculously come back, and they moved on, right? So those two teams moved on, but different ways.
The point is, their regular seasons were so good that to me, there's an expected regression and not a sustainable standard. They've been good teams for a long time, for the most part, based on the number of years in the playoffs that I referenced for both. So, okay, so the Jets dropped from 116 down to 106. Fine. They're going to be in a good place. And if the Capitals drop 10 points from 111 down to 101, they're making it. They're middle of the pack, and they will be fine. The question is, well, let's do it quickly on the Jets, since we kind of went through the depth of the Capitals. Yep. Connor, Scheifele, Vilardi, the latter, not healthy in the postseason, didn't give them the pop that he did in the regular season. And you have Jonathan Toews reemerging with the potential to help lift Cole Perfetti. You have a captain and Lowry injured to start the year. But again, I'm going to hammer home no Nick Ehlers, which was the most predictable player outside of Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele on the roster. What does it mean to them?
Nick Ehlers is going to leave a void in Winnipeg. And the biggest thing for me is, I get it, Vilardi can fill in some of that offense. I think Cole Perfetti can come in and fill in some of that offense. But if you're going to say, we're going to move on from Nick Ehlers because we have to address our second line center position, and with Lowry especially being hurt to start the season, and what you're doing with that money that you saved on Ehlers is you say Jonathan Toews is going to come in and be our second line center, I think you have a problem. I think you have a problem. I think Winnipeg is going to be a really good team, mostly because they got great goaltending. And it wasn't just Hellebuck. Eric Comrie was really good as a backup goaltender. It allowed him to play the way that maybe less than usual for Hellebuck. And they're going to be good defensively. But second line center, your top six has taken a hit, losing Ehlers and not adding a center to be able to fill in a little bit of that.
So you have what percentage of faith in Jonathan Toews' season?
If you told me Jonathan Toews is going to be your third line center or maybe your fourth line center, I'm totally fine. Expect 35 points out of Jonathan Toews playing in a limited role, a third line, fourth line role. As a second line center, you'd have to be 55, 60 points. I don't think Jonathan Toews is going to get there. I think 30 to 35 is probably the expectation for me. And it may not even be that. Look, the guy hasn't been healthy. And he hasn't played like at the high level in almost 5 years.
Well, Perfetti's a pretty good player, though.
Yeah, and Alex Iafallo is like taking a step forward. When they needed him to play top six, he did. They still have probably one of the best third line when Lowry is healthy. Mm. When you think of Niederreiter, Lowry, and maybe Namestnikov, or maybe Iafallo there, Namestnikov can play top six. Maybe he is your second line center and you drop Toews. There's options. I think there's still question marks. And look, the question marks is comparing Winnipeg to the President's Trophy winning Jets last year. Like you said, they're not going to be 116 points, but even if they're 106, you're totally fine in Winnipeg.
Well, just to make sure that we don't always do this, but I mean, we try to compare in this Team of the Day series, you know, some baseline notes, so it appears like an honest evaluation across the board. And most recently, as the series has gone on, we've tried to tell you what these teams have in the pipeline as well, as per Corey Pronman from The Athletic. Now, I find Washington to be particularly interesting in this regard because their pipeline ranking is 15th, where the Jets is 25th. And the Capitals have been able to do this at 15th while elevating players into the NHL lineup on the heels of multiple Calder Cups, on the heels of winning a Stanley Cup. So I think it's a real feather, I haven't said this in a while, in the cap of Washington to be this good in so many areas while turning it over behind the bench and maintaining the presence of Ovechkin and losing Backstrom and Oshie and all the rest. So I think there's a lot to be said there. And I think Winnipeg deserves kudos always because of what they've cultivated as one of the smallest markets in the NHL and a loyalty among top players for the most part. And it wasn't...
Re-signed Scheifele and Hellebuck.
Yes, exactly. There's something special there. 100% there's something special there. So,
and Connor may resign, and then you're like, hey, you're building with core guys that are standouts. Like Scheifele last year, still had himself 39 goals and 87 points. Like, he was one goal away from being a 40-goal scorer, and that's great.
Scheifele and Connor are the two highest scorers in playoff franchise history for the Jets. And they're still on the roster and still have almost a decade worth to give. They do. Yeah, You know what I mean?
And Scott Arneil did a great job. It wasn't an easy situation for him to come in and as the head coach, and in his now second year as the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I still think, okay, let's play Winnipeg against Washington, 7-game series right now with their roster.
Mm-hmm.
Who wins? And I think it would come down to me, Hellebuck versus, and Hellebuck has not been the playoff goalie or the big money goalie, right? It's been like pretty controversial in that way. But I'm going to say Winnipeg would win this matchup right now. So I'm a little bit more bullish on the Jets than I am on the Capitals.
Right. But the playoffs aren't played in September. And so if I was to project these rosters, into April and late May, my wild card in assessing and or predicting would be which young players that we don't know about yet make it into the mix. Like, does, just for example, like from Winnipeg's standpoint, does Braden Jaeger make the team?
Yeah.
He's done everything he can in junior. Does Lambert, after a drop-off last year with the Manitoba Moose, re-engage and earn himself a spot in his third-year pro, right?
Yeah, so, Hendrix LaPierre is the third-line center, like, and projected, and he's... doesn't have a lot of NHL experience.
No, but he has
AHL success.
He had the good AHL experience. Yes. And that's what we saw from Connor McMichael last year. And it was like, holy cow, he actually surprised here for some that he did take all that success and flip it and then the Capitals. So do any of those kids help fill in for the absence of Ehlers in Washington? Does Marashnichenko climb into the ranks from a Capitals standpoint, if out of necessity, right? So those are the wild cards. I would just, you know, probably for the sake of argument, I would just go on the Capitals side right now if we were to see them next year going head to head against the Jets. But I think it's a fascinating match.
I'm glad that the Capitals didn't add much. Like, they lost Mangiapane, UFA. They lost Lars Eller, UFA. They lost T.J. Oshie, retired. And then they traded.
Who had not played,
but they played it for Justin Sirtoff and Declan Chisholm. And it's like, would these two be part of the depth, or is it just like minor league stuff? Or, but they did not add anything really.
Right.
So it's,
and again,
just,
you don't need to because of what's been in Hershey, right? Even Ethan Frank last year, you know, came up and had, he's older, not technically a prospect, but he came out of that program. And that's what fit for them. So I love the way that this all lined up, and it gave us two W's. You always want to start with back-to-back W's in your campaign. Well, that's how we're closing our Team of the Day series, right?
Just don't go play them in Europe.
On that note.
Unless you're the Devils. That was fine for them.
Devils are on the ice tonight, and Prospects Challenge begins. The Devils are going to be against the Sabres tomorrow when Buffalo takes to the ice in their home rink for the Prospects Challenge, which is Lee Comm Harbor Center. We wrap up Sabres Live after this.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Less than two to go on the show, Marty. Obviously, the date on the calendar is the date that, for all of us who lived it, lived through it, connected to it in any way, mostly through family, friends, loss, devastation, tragedy. I know this, you know, it's very hard to put into words even after 24 years.
Yeah, and most of the stories have been told many, many times, but, you know, that was the first day of training camp in 2001, September 11th. I was on the medical table doing my AKG when, you know, somebody come in, turn the TV on, and didn't know what was going on. And we were supposed to go to St. Catharines that afternoon. Obviously, did not go over to Canada. The borders were closed. We were the first sporting event in Manhattan. Obviously, we opened the season at MSG against the Rangers. Wore the New York jerseys. The Rangers did the same. You know, Mark Messier with the Chief Downey's picture on the fireman helmet. All of that was incredible. It was just heartbreaking. I got to play with the Rangers in Manhattan. We went on a visit of the, you know, the 9/11 museum. It's definitely a day you remember. But there's always stories you don't know. Like I just read today for the first time, Bruce Boudreau, the coach and, you know, the media personality now, was supposed to be on one of the planes with Ace Bailey and was invited to LA a day before. So his family thought he was on the plane because he didn't tell his kids he had changed his plane and they thought he was on the plane. So he says he's lucky to be alive, but that definitely shook the hockey world, the world in everybody.
Never forget all those that we lost and hope for somehow better days ahead. Thanks for being with us today, folks. We'll close out the week at the rink tomorrow at Sabres Live.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.